Hey, who am I talking to?
This is Zach Geller with Acoustic Cycles.
Okay, Zach, you came out from Colorado to show at the Philly Bike Expo. That's quite a mission. You're kind of a, I guess you're a small builder right now, but you've been really making a name for yourself with push bikes and then trail bikes.
Yeah, we the push bikes started off as a little bit of a joke, and then we got a lot of traction, so kept going, sold quite a few of those, and, you know, kind of kicked myself every time I made one, but...
Why do you kick yourself every time you make one?
They're actually really challenging. They take a lot of time.
Yeah, we've discussed a few points of order on them before, yeah, but, like, so... Why did you start doing it, and what were you trying to do on the first one?
So I started making them. My sister and two best friends had kids, and I wanted to just keep making as many bikes as I could, just to, I think you can glean something from every bike you make.
And they're pretty low on the material count.
They are low on the material count, for sure. I didn't realize they would be so high on the time count, but...
Oh, really? So, like, compared to, say... this hardtail trail bike next to us, what sort of time difference is there in the fabrication?
Well, the fabrication actually takes a little bit longer on the kids' bikes because I couldn't find certain parts. So I'm machining the dropouts on a manual lathe, which takes a lot of time, doing the caps for the top of the fork legs. Paragon was out of the stems, the stem clamps for a while, so I was making my own on those.
Yeah, I had to shore up my supply for a little bit in there, too.
Yep, understandable.
You know, that's what's funny is because those handlebars, I'm about to reverse my binder, so they'll look a lot more like your handlebars.
Nice, nice.
So you're beating me to the punch on that one.
I was trying to keep kids' knees away from those little bolts.
Oh, yeah, I think it probably just makes more sense.
Yeah.
But we're used to the way we see things, right?
Right. Exactly.
So what's, other than having to make those parts yourself manually or whatnot, what's the biggest challenge with the push bikes?
The biggest challenge with the push bikes, which was actually a good learning experience, was just the really tight angles and just trying to get your torch in the really small spaces.
Torch clearance.
Yeah, exactly. So I felt like if I could weld one of those guys, when I go to this fat bike, it feels like I got days of room.
You have all the room in the world then.
Yeah.
And so you've done it for a while now, and what do you think about doing them? Looking at it now, not necessarily then.
As far as the push bikes go?
Yeah, like what's your feeling about them or your desire around them or do you have a fascination still with them?
I do in that if we can get kids on good bikes, I think it's a good practice. Like I think the balance bike concept in general is great. If we can get more kids on good bikes to start out, and get them hooked now, not because I want to sell them stuff, because biking is amazing, but I think if we can keep getting kids on good bikes, you know, I'll suck up my negatives and,
sure,
and keep going.
So the other day I had an epiphany. I watched a woman ride by me on a Surron getting from downtown Fairfax, obviously, back up the hill, and behind her was her daughter on a converted juvenile bike that had an electric motor on it, and this kid was hauling ass right at the edge of her control, following her mom on the big Surron.
Nice.
And it occurred to me that starting around now, most kids, in a way, aren't going to ride pedal bikes. They are going to go directly to electric motorcycles.
Yeah.
And in a way, when I look at your push bike, I think, why hasn't he stuck a motor in it yet? And because the thing is, that truly is the future.
Right.
And the thing is that seems to be what's next in that venue, is that they will all have motors and little batteries, and that's how it's done. Mm-hmm. And have you been thinking about that kind of thing, or are you excited maybe to do it, or do you really not want to do that?
I wouldn't be opposed to it. I honestly never thought of it. And this is probably me looking at my childhood. When I was a kid, my parents, they would entertain me doing anything without a motor. So they thought as long as I was pedaling, getting exercise, they do it. That was before they knew what downhill bikes were and how much those cost. But that's kind of, I guess, stuck in my brain. I wouldn't be opposed to it.
I think the world has changed significantly since I was a kid and since you were a kid.
It's true.
A whole different thing now.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I mean, it's a cool idea, and you know, there's room for it.
Right. I mean, all you need is a hub motor. Yeah. I mean, is that 10-inch that we're looking at?
The wheel size is a 12.
Okay, so that's a 12-inch. And I think that there are full monoblock hub motors available for where there's no spokes. It's just a one big hub motor.
Right.
And so you just bolt it up and connect a battery and a throttle, and you're all set.
That's a good... I honestly never thought about it, but I think we could do it.
I mean, I've worked a lot in the motorcycle industry, and the thing is, the little motorcycles, the little peewees and all that stuff, kids can ride a motorcycle before they can ride a pedal bike, based on the back in the day.
Right.
Because there's actually less to think about and do from a child's level.
Right.
They just do a throttle versus having to pedal and balance.
For sure.
And all that. So you'd see kids on peewees versus before they were on bicycles.
Right. No, that makes
sense.
And
it just seems like, I mean, that's where what I've been thinking a lot about.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I should look into that more.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Okay.
Just because also it's like you might as well just blow it all up. You know, just blow up the internet. It's your shot.
No, I mean, might as well. I mean, we started, I made the first one like a week after that Specialized Hot Walk, the carbon one, came out.
Oh, yeah. That thing was crazy. Crazy.
And, like, people were furious and they sold out. Like, it was polarizing in so many ways. But,
well, I mean,
it was
just
pretty cool.
It's just the insane luxury that is essentially all people's entitlement now.
Yeah.
That for some reason their child needs a $6,000 push bike.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, the elephant in the room, your big yellow thing here.
Yep.
So you did it.
Uh-huh.
This is quite an accomplishment.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's a cool looking bike. It hasn't been ridden yet, I guess.
It has not yet.
And I guess you're excited too. I'm sure you're
going
to do it once you're done with the show.
Yeah, definitely.
But you've mentioned the other day we were talking, and you have some downhill experience.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a bit about, because a lot of people at the bike show here may never have ridden a full suspension bike.
Right.
And let alone proper downhill riding, mm-hmm. which is a whole different thing.
Right.
And what was your background with riding big bikes? And then what are you trying to get done with this new bike?
Right, so I grew up in Colorado pretty much my whole life. Rode bikes, well, started mountain biking when I was 4 with my dad, and you know, started watching the New World Disorder video series back in the day, and got hooked, and I had to have a Kona.
Not just all heel clickers.
Exactly. But I had to have a Kona.
Uh-huh.
Eventually got.
You
gotta
go stinky or go home.
Kind of stinky deluxe, that blue and silver with the orange brakes.
Oh yeah. The world was stinkies back then.
I loved that thing. I contemplated painting it to match.
Oh really?
Wow. Which we didn't do, obviously, but. Yeah, I got into, you know, trying to huck our own cliffs in Colorado Springs, making our own tracks, and then that eventually turned into going to the downhill bike parks. Eventually started racing in high school and college. Raced a little bit when I was at CU. You know, had a few proper DH bikes. Eventually got kind of rid of them because we were only going to the bike park, you know, 5-6 times a year.
It's tough to justify a real DH bike. I've had a couple, and it's like, If you're buying season passes and you're getting your runs and all that stuff, it's like, yeah, you can do it.
Right.
But if you aren't, it's just not even worth thinking about.
And I worked at bike shops, but I had a $10,000 demo that was carbon that I rode 3 times in each season, and I had to let it go. And then.
And also in the past, say, 5 or 10 years, trail bikes have gotten insanely good.
And so much more capable.
Right.
Like, so part of my thinking was, I mean, I hate to say like all arounder, but this is this bike that we made is definitely more on the downhill side.
You're looking at, this is a 160, 170?
It's 160, 160.
160, 160, but it's a brute. I mean, it's got a coil.
Coil front and rear.
Coil front and rear, and it's got to be plush as hell. And you've got all kinds of little gizmos all over it.
Uh-huh.
And, okay, like, so you're coming from that. What are you seeing in your head? Like, what do you, I'm trying to get to, like, what's the job?
Of this bike?
Yeah, what's the job that it's going to fill?
So, personally, I ride ups for the downs. I will suffer up because it feels better on the way down, personally. But this bike is definitely geared to be as fast and efficient on the down. And I'm sacrificing a little bit on the ups. I'm the way I made that pulley, the idler pulley, I can play with positioning slightly to help the pedaling characteristics. So I do plan to play with that a little bit, but it's definitely geared more towards the down. But I still want it to be able to get me up fairly comfortably. I don't want to be cursing it at the top of the hill, but I want it to be the best feeling downhill trail bike I can. And then I want to get it to the park. I know all the parks closed, but I want to get to the park eventually to see how it performs. And I love the feel of coil, which obviously has a weight penalty, a little bit of penalty when you're setting it up. Once it's set up, I just think it's hard to beat.
Yeah. Coil's pretty nice. I actually this summer got to ride Trestle Bike Park. I did two days at Trestle.
Nice.
It was so different from North Star.
Oh yeah.
Because North Star is just rock and chunder, and Trestle's just jumps and berms.
Oh yeah.
It's just I'm out of my comfort zone because I'm not a jumper at all. I'm a rocks and roots guy. I want it gnarly and sketchy, and Trestle was just like, oh shit, I've got to send another double. Oh jeez.
Well, next year come out, we'll do Keystone. If you want to ride,
I heard Keystone's excellent like that. I just didn't have the time. But
I don't even go to Trestle anymore. Keystone, if you want steep, rooty, rocky,
yeah,
Keystone's a
pick. I did hear that. I need to do that next time. So you worked with a number of other people in the industry to get various parts done. What's his name at Reeb?
Adam Procise Procise Metalworks. He machined the rocker links for me, and not only did I want him to machine the rocker links, I wanted his knowledge because he knows a ton.
Yeah.
And he gave me tons of great advice while I was designing, not only to work well with the bike, but also design well to be machined properly and as efficiently as possible.
Yeah, I mean, he works in a place that's a fairly tight ship, and you know he's eager and he's after it on the bike or off. He's pretty much after it.
Oh yeah.
And so he's definitely the go-to guy. Yeah. It's becoming for sure. I've had discussions with him in the past, and it's always fun and challenging, you know, with him because we have different personalities we've said shit to each other and stuff. But let's talk about the engineering of this. Now, the front of the bike is obviously fairly straightforward, and you had to, you know, play with the kinematics, as the kids say.
Correct.
And I think, were you saying the other day that you did this in SolidWorks or Fusion, you did your kinematics, or were you using linkage on that?
So I used a combination. I used linkage to kind of figure out the platform I wanted to use. Tweaked it to get my points of where the suspension would be, and then I carried those points over to Fusion 360.
Right.
And then, so I built the whole model in Fusion 360. I also used BikeCAD to help check myself. So I really, between those three programs, I was triple checking everything.
I really wish BikeCAD built in some stuff for full suspension.
Yeah, me too.
So it at least looked right, and you could kind of, I mean, I know it's not going to be a kinematics calculator or anything like that, but like, you know, I when I draw my wife's full suspension bike, I just blank out the whole rear end.
Right.
And it's just as if it's not there, and that way people don't get distracted that it doesn't look right.
Oh,
It's just, but I get the numbers, right?
Yeah. If you looked at my BikeCAD model, you would see a funky double seat stay coming off it to try to make it look like that. Mm-hmm. But really, I only needed it for one dimension.
Yeah, you just got to give up at some point. Now, what sort of bottom bracket shell width are you running on this? Didn't you say 83
it's
before?
It's an 83, yeah.
So it's definitely a brute. And the rear end is a 1 what?
157.
And that's the Boost Plus?
Boost Plus, yeah.
Yeah. So this thing is definitely all about going downhill.
It is. For sure.
And dropper, you got a 240 in there?
It's a 180.
Oh, it's a 180.
Yeah.
And, okay, so that's that seat post alignment, essentially like the effective seat tube angle.
Right.
Or whatnot. And depth of dropper insertion are a massive problem when working on full suspension bikes.
Yep.
And I'm sure you pulled your hair out A lot.
Yeah.
Because I've done the same thing.
Did you see my hair?
Oh, there you see? It's all gone. That's what this will do to you folks. But like, what? So you had to deal with. I've described, because I've designed two full suspension bikes almost all the way to almost pulling the trigger and then never did.
Right.
And it's because I couldn't necessarily live with the compromises
yeah.
I had made. And what I always say about designing full suspension bikes is you start off with a list of everything you want and then you tear it up and throw it away because you're going to get nothing that you want.
Mm-hmm.
What's killing you here? Or what did you really want and you just couldn't make happen?
For one, I would say I had pipe dreams of making the lightest full coil 160 frame I could possibly
okay,
make.
Okay, these are dreams, yeah.
So I would say first off, it's that. Second off, so just for a few reasons, the seat posts... the C-tube acted as my backbone. So I'm referencing everything off the C-tube. That's how I make my jig. So I'm welding the C-tube with all the pivots before I do anything else.
Uh-huh.
So for a few reasons, it allowed me to keep everything as square as possible as I could. And then also, I can really tailor the whole front end to whatever I wanted.
Right,
I wasn't relying
right.
on any braces that were going directly to the down tube or the top tube.
Yeah.
Again, I still need to do some, you know, real life testing on it. I may eventually want to connect down to the down tube just for strength. But the way I did it, again, or what you just said, I have some issues with how big of a C-post I can run.
Right.
And that's an issue. I would love to on version 2 work maybe with 3D printing to try to alleviate some of that, and that you know that would require me to move the pivot forward or backward a little bit.
It's just really hard because you start moving your pivots around to get the seat tube clearance, and now you've got a whole nother problem in another area, and then you got tire clearance or you can't make a brace or
right.
I mean it is a cluster and nobody ever wins.
Yeah.
It's really tough.
I will say the one nice, not happy accident, but the high pivot does help a lot with heel clearance. And I could really get away with a 73mm grogging bracket on this.
Right, right. That'd
be
nice.
If I wanted to. But also...
And you have straight lower struts that could probably be bent a little bit too, just to kind of smooth it out a little.
There is a double bend in the chainstay.
The second, the first bend I should have seen, but the second is very slight.
It is very slight, and I modeled a 510 shoe on the non-drive side just to check myself.
That's awesome. I do heel clearance like stuff, and I haven't done a shoe.
No, I took the profile of I found the photo of a bottom of a 510 shoe because everyone's obsessed with the grip on those, and then I used that to model the shoe.
I use 510s, so I think they're great.
I wanted to make sure I didn't want to go through the whole thing and be like, shit, I didn't think about the heel. So.
Oh, well, it is sucky when you make a bike, and like you've got some fat bikes here and everything like that, so I'm sure you've been down that road many times before.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're clicking your heel on the stay every pedal stroke,
that's
no fun at all.
No, not at all. So, but I will say, with the seat post as kind of the backbone, what Reeb does with their machine clamshells, I think is amazing and really addresses a lot of those problems that we're talking about. Because they're able to machine the pivots, and it's just forward in one spot and just rearward in one spot, and they have a full C-tube.
But what I mean, it's they have in a way more of a production mindset.
Yeah.
And when you're in the custom realm, you know, you're trying to adjust the saddle position just so.
Right.
And the thing about making a full suspension bike, it almost locks you into just one effect, one actual seat tube.
Yeah.
Location for the axis, and if you don't like it, go home type of thing.
Right.
And just that, if you wanted to have that ability to move the seat tube around, it just is instantly horrific.
Right, because, well, to that point, right now, I can vary a degree or two forward or backward, and I really am just moving one pivot slightly. Well, sorry, two, but I can make it work right now the way I'm producing them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what... Other solutions might become elegant, but then you're fixed.
Right.
Type of thing.
Yeah. For sure.
But then again, it's like at some point you just have to lock things in.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
What What do you think was the biggest challenge, say, other than the seat tube stuff, the challenge in getting this bike put together or designed?
I would say from a design standpoint, you know, a bicycle is a simple thing, but when you start, I'll say they're not that simple, but then when you get into the full suspension, there are just certain things, like I ran into when I was doing the rear end, I have to dish my wheel a little bit, which I don't love. So I think in the next version I would account for that better. So I just have a centered rear wheel, so I don't have to dish anymore. But it was just like all those tiny things added up very quickly to become small problems or small annoyances. So I have a whole list of, not a whole list, I have a list of a few things that in version 2 I definitely want to address just to make things easier. Also just small things, like I did some flat steel bracing points, which are fine for what I was trying to accomplish, but when you take everything apart, if I'm thinking from a customer standpoint, if you really wrenched on that thing, you could bend a little bit. So I think like next time I'd probably just go straight tubing with that. Mm-hmm. So just like small things like that I figured out while I was producing or assembling. There's just a lot of tiny little things to think about, and they just, you know, they're small, but added together they can make a lot of.
So you work professionally as an engineer, I believe.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Okay, but you've been around and you've used CAD a lot, and you've done designs and modeling for all different situations, I'm sure. What are some methods or ways you like to lay out in CAD? I'm trying, kind of switching gears more to the working environment of the designer or the engineer. What are some cool things you like to do maybe in your model, or tricks or tips that you kind of like think are important when you're working with that? You're in Fusion 360, yep, obviously. Yep. So what's kind of cool in that realm?
Using a parametric model that you can just like feed in or take the time to set it up really well. So like I can go in and change my top tube by just changing one of the parameters.
Right.
So going through and taking the time, like it's hard when you're excited and you get an idea and you're like, you just want to go. And so like calm yourself down, take a second, set up all the parameters, and then you can go back and very easily change everything or tweak things. Because once you forget to do that, then you gotta pull your model back. You know, it screws something up going forward. So,
well, I do something like I'm the same way. I have an equations list where I have defined parameters, and then I build from there. And that situation you're talking about where you get really excited and you're getting stuff done, that's an energy you want to harness.
Yeah.
And I call that the slashing and burning, uh-huh, where you're just breaking shit and making it so.
Right.
And built into that is going back later and cleaning it up with that knowledge. But that couple hours of really excited ideation is worth capturing if you're ready to just go, oh, I'm just going to have to spend a couple hours fixing everything afterwards.
Right.
But you get that that boom in your design.
Yeah, definitely. And not necessarily related to CAD so much, but I made a conscious decision to buy a 3D printer when I started this. So while I was designing, I was printing parts to check clearances to try to get some of those clearance issues I thought I might have out of the way before I printed in metal. And I was skeptical with the printer I bought, but I was shocked at how good it was.
Did you get that really tall one that prints the big sections? It's a little less robust than others, but you can print, like, you could print a full-length tube almost.
No, I got the Prusa that most people have, the orange and black one.
Oh, yeah.
I was a little skeptical, but I was shocked. You know, I bought the one I put together myself, and when I was done, no way this is going to work. And it actually was printing fairly accurately, and it eliminated a ton of problems for me.
Yeah, it's nice to actually see for real, certainly getting out of the model space for that kind of stuff. So, you know, the kids on Pink Bike like to talk about kinematics, and I'm sure that when you went through this whole process, did you say it? You were a year and a half on this project?
Yeah.
So through that time, I'm sure you learned a lot of actual practical understanding of kinematic principles or what's important or what you're doing. What was kind of your idea of all that before you started modeling, and what did you learn was actually kind of BS, or just like, no, that's something they talk about in the magazines. It's not a thing or whatever. You know what I mean? Just
what's
the real world versus expectations?
Well, like, you know, pedal kickback is a big talking point of high pivot, right? That's essentially the idea for the idler. You know, and you go on Pink Bike, you can read everything's right and everything's wrong, right?
Right.
So, you know, I got into it. Oh, we can't have any pedal kickback. And then I kind of went through and I was like, well, no, most bikes have some pedal kickback. And
they work fine.
And they work fine. And, right. And you would never know unless somebody really told you what was happening. And I just kind of found, you know, I had some very strong opinions from just not knowing any better about all the kinematics. Like, oh, it's got to be this, it's got to be this. And it's not really any one thing. It's a combination of everything.
Right, you got to make rock soup. And it's like, it's going to... The one thing isn't important. It's the whole thing
right. That's
important.
And if you're amazing on anti-squat or amazing on... pedal kickback, if you're amazing, you know, on one thing, something else is going to suffer.
Right.
So you can't just be good at one thing. We hate to say all around. You got to be decent at all of it.
Right.
To make a great bike.
And it's got to fit within what the bike's expected to do well.
Right. Exactly. Because you're not gonna. I'm not gonna make a 160 bike that's gonna be used at Leadville 100.
Right.
Just not possible.
Right.
So. Yeah, I like, through the process as far as kinematics go, I definitely had, like, preconceived notions that you got to hit this number, you got to hit this number. And if you could let that go first, I probably wouldn't take a year and a half. I probably would have let more things go. I would have figured out you're going to compromise way more.
Yeah. I mean, you got a bike done. I haven't. Because I can't seem to just give up on certain things,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I still got to ride it, so I got to report back.
So you talk about doing some initial points and things like that in Linkage for getting some kinematic stuff. And one thing I did when I was modeling some stuff is you can, in SolidWorks, that's my program I'm using, I can create those kinematic curves in SolidWorks as well.
Right.
Did you do something similar in Fusion 360 for plotting out some of the kinematic details so that it wasn't just plots coming out of Linkage? It was actually, no, you're using a CAD program to make the plots, so it's actually the real thing type of thing.
Right. I stopped short in Fusion. I wasn't familiar with doing that in Fusion 360 as much, so I started stopped short, but I definitely want to for the next versions because not only would it be easier to just have that in the program, but, you know, there's got to be some information loss going between the three programs, right?
Yeah. Well, we get the points, but, like, me as a geometry geek, I have a real problem with Linkage because the way it talks about the bike geometry, mm-hmm. I think, is wrong.
Right.
And doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And they've tried to improve it. What's the guy's name that makes the program? I forget. I mean, I don't think he's misaligned.
Right.
It's just he's primarily looking at kinematics. And,
if
you're into geometry, it's like this is crack cocaine over here. This is all crazy.
I know.
But at least in my modeling package, I can define it exactly how I intend it to be. And at least I'm getting that.
Right. And I don't want to take anything. Linkage, awesome program.
It is awesome. And it's well, I mean, for the price, holy cow.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. But I would love to see Brent and Linkage come together.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. Just fold the two together. Because
yeah.
I think that's probably even what the bicycle... Well, I don't know. I talked about this yesterday at my thing about everybody needs bike CAD. And it's like, raise your hand in the room who's got bike CAD. And like two people raise their hands.
Wow.
And it's like... I don't know. It's just, how do people do it?
Oh, that's an amazing... I mean, I wouldn't be here if I didn't have his program. It's been amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. What else? I mean, you've got a little Garveler here. You've got a fat bike. You know, what's the rest of your image? Like, you're trying to grow your brand right now.
Yep.
You're trying to expand into, you know... I mean, I guess it's like full-time paying gig that grows.
Yep.
What's your vision there?
I'm pretty mountain bike centric. I dipped into gravel a tiny bit. I would love to start making maybe a kind of a spec frame That I could have on the shelf and farm out or sell.
I think spec rear ends are the way to go.
I agree.
Do rear end spec. There's three sizes. Yep. And because frame building wise, it's like you can bolt any front end to it.
Yeah, exactly.
And front end's where most of the changes are happening.
Yeah.
So just, you can have a rack full of all the parts for that and then just make bikes.
For sure. And it would definitely help the wallet if I can start buying a few more parts than one.
Right. You know, being able to CNC machine in runs of 20 is, or at least 20, if not more, is pretty awesome. But I think, you know, based on my way of looking at what other people understand geometry as, I don't really believe in the fully custom frame too much.
Yeah.
Maybe when it comes to welding doodads on, that's one thing. But from a geometry point of view, it's like, man, if you just had front ends changing, that would cover 99.9 of every situation.
For sure. And, I mean, if somebody approached me about a custom rear end on this full suspension, what would we be changing?
Right.
Just length.
Right.
Right. So it's a 440 now. I could go 435 if they really wanted, or 450.
Well, but then, I mean, think how many hours you'd have trying to check the kinematics and get it. I mean, the knock-on effects of just a 10-millimeter chainstay length is crazy compared to, oh, we just cut different tubes for the front end.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
Okay, what would you tell a young kid that was stoked? They've been riding some downhill and some enduro, and they want to like make their vision a reality. What would you want them to know? Because you've gone through that process. And not necessarily are they going to make a brand.
Right.
Just like, you know, they want to actualize their vision, right? And like, what would you want them to hear?
Just as far as like making it, like if they wanted to make a bike for themselves.
Make a bike or make parts or whatever. Just for them, just because they're stoked.
Yeah. I think it's very challenging. You're going to have mistakes. I continue to be very hard on myself, as a lot of people here are always.
You don't get better without that.
It's true. It's going to be hard. You're going to fail. Push through it, and you'll come up with something really cool. I think it's a great process. I would say ask as many questions, and everybody says this, but seriously, ask as many questions. If you're on social media, talk to builders. 99.9% of people I ever asked a question to were so helpful.
Yeah,
this community has been awesome. Like,
it's definitely a great world for that, the interactions. And then you get to know people, and then you meet up at bike shows. We're meeting finally as well, you know?
It's been great. I have yet to really meet a bad person at these things. And
oh, no, there are bad people.
Well, they hit it pretty well. But, I mean, it's super fun, and we're all here because we love bikes and we love biking and we love this world. So we're not going to not want to talk about it.
Cool.
Ask me questions.
Awesome. Thank you very much for your time.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.